Yeah, totally. I mean, the idea was to replicate the jungle, but we couldn't have Fog of War, right? Like in a video game. We couldn't find an elegant way to do that. So instead, what we did was created this rule, this mechanism, where the perimeter of the dome, so the line around the dome, is blocking line of sight, but it's not blocking movement.
Oh.
So that's something I don't think it's... I think it's something new.
Howdy friends, Craig here. Ray has a great conversation with Giacomo Neri of PvP Geeks. He's one of the designers of the new card-driven miniature board game, Sky Tier. I thought it was really interesting to find out how GW's Shadespire inspired their game design. They liked the basic concept, but found some shortcomings. What they decided to do was to marry Magic the Gathering with Leagues of Legend. It's a card-driven MOBA board game. Now, they did send a copy of the game to the third floor, and I took a look at it, and I gotta tell you, I was very impressed with the models. The sculpts are really impressive. The two of them go in depth on how the game works, what the basic mechanics are, some key decision points, and really how they took the idea of a MOBA and translated it to the board game itself. I think you're going to find this really interesting. Enjoy.
Playing a tabletop strategy game allows you to unplug and test your skills against friends. Every week, Third Floor Wars delivers useful strategies, discussions, battle reports, and reviews to tabletop games like Malifaux. If you want to get better at the games you already play, or discover the games other people are playing, you are in the right place. Craig and Ray welcome you to the Third Floor and the Tabletop Talk Broadcast.
Ray here on the Third Floor, and today we're drifting away from pure miniatures to a more Underworlds or God Tier kind of concept and discussing PvP Geek's first game, Sky Tear. Now joining me to talk about this interesting new game is Giacomo Neri. Giacomo and his team are from Modena, Italy, and have an already impressive track record as this game launched and was successfully funded not once, but twice. Giacomo, welcome to Third Floor. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and the interesting journey that brought Sky Tear to us?
Sure, hi. Thanks. So the journey started about 2 years ago when we tried Shadespire, Warhammer Underworld, for the first time, and we realized the potential of the format of the boxed war game, sort of. Except we saw too many shortcomings and things we didn't like. So we decided, okay, let's do something better than Games Workshop. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
So here we are after 2 years.
That's pretty incredible. And it's happened pretty quick, too, because like you said, it's just been a couple of years since the involvement of the idea of like, you know what, this game's good, but it's not that good. to let's get something that is on Kickstarter and is successfully funded. And that's really incredible.
Yeah, we're quite happy. I mean, what I can say is that I think we went all in. In a sense that both me and my brother, the other partner in this project, we went full time for 2 full years.
Wow.
And we invested a lot of money.
Oh, sure.
We could have bought an house, you know. And yeah, so.
It was definitely the gamble then. It's like, this is either going to work or we're in trouble.
Yeah, it was a huge risk. And so I think that helped in dramatically speeding up and accelerate the project.
Well, it's awesome. That's very incredible, man. It's such a pleasure to have you with me today. Again, thank you for joining me. So we're going to do some quick just preamble here. Those who are faithful to our podcast, you know the drill. But for our new listeners, here's how this episode's going to break down. We're going to talk about the game in 4 different sections, starting with the theme. We're going to go over what the setting is and how does that theme translate to the table. We're going to talk about the pregame, where we'll determine how win conditions are determined, how you build your crew, or the army or list or whatever that is. And then what decisions are made in general before the game begins. Then we'll move to in-game and talk about the mechanics, what makes it unique, what kind of cool things happen there that are going to make it worth playing. And then we'll finish everything up with the hobby aspects of the game. Now, following the likes of juggernauts such as Kaman, PvP Geeks includes all the minis you need to play in the box, with expansions planned for release to help expand the game. And it's all pre-assembled, so you don't have to put anything together. You can go literally from picking it off the shelf to putting it on the table. So we'll kind of go over what you can expect from contents to quality in that regards. Now, normally I would read the blurb or elevator pitch from the website or Kickstarter page, but today we're going to just do the tagline and get right into it, because this is a phenomenal tagline, and it's "The Magic the Gathering meets League of Legends, a card-driven tabletop MOBA." And for those of you who aren't familiar with what a MOBA is, it's a online game. Mobile online or multiplayer online battle arena, where you're picking multiple heroes to push down lanes that have waves of minions coming down it and try to blow down your opponent's defensive towers and eventually get to their base and take it out. So if this doesn't pique your interest already, well, I beg you to keep listening, because it's going to get a whole lot better. Now, that's enough talking from me. Giacomo, you and your brother Ricardo, you said both you designed this game in about 2 years. Can you tell us a little bit more about the inspiration for the game's thematics? Like, what made you choose to do a MOBA and emulate that on the tabletop?
All right. So, first of all, we were addicted to MOBAs, to League of Legends ourselves, and so that's a good starting point.
Sure.
Second, we saw what we thought was a hole in the market, because, first of all, video game MOBA players are millions, so it's a huge market. It's one of the most popular video game genre. But also, we couldn't see a tabletop game that was trying to emulate MOBA at the right level of abstraction, what for our taste and for our point of view is the right level of abstraction.
Right.
So given the fact that we wanted to make the ultimate competitive miniatures game, I think the MOBA angle was a very good one for us to come from. So I don't regret the choice.
I can't argue with that either. And it's like and it seems like that's kind of the gestalt of a couple of games that have come out. So people, players look at a game and go, you know what? This could be so much better if just they did this. And a lot of times that ends up just kind of being table talk, where you're talking to your buddies. It's like, man, if I designed a game, I wouldn't do this. But you guys you took the risk, took the plunger. It's like, you know what? This could be better. We love MOBAs. There aren't any MOBA tabletop games. Let's just do this.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, there's 24 playable heroes, with 8 already included in the core box. Was there a particular design goal for these heroes? What led you to do 24, for instance?
Yeah, 24, first of all, if you're a first-time creator or designer, don't do that. Lesson learned. It's an overkill. There's so many. But with this said, we wanted to have that many because we wanted to have a thriving and diverse, interesting competitive scene. And we knew that we needed some kind of critical mass, right? So with this said, the goal of this design was diversity and especially a balance, to use a very overused word. We wanted to make sure that all 24 were interesting in their own way and playable and competitive, so to speak.
Right, just kind of minimize the variance between top tier and bottom tier, so to speak.
Right, exactly. And that's, by the way, that's the same philosophy we use for designing the 96 cards in the set. We wanted to make sure, unlike typical trading card games, that we didn't have any filler or any, cards that, you will never play. So that was a strong design principle for us.
Okay. And so Ricardo Parmigiani is your lore master for the game. And because you have two Ricardos, I believe he's called Parma.
Yeah.
Is he the one who came up with all the lore and all the concepts and all the thematics for these 24 heroes? Or did you and your brother already kind of know what world you wanted and then he built it from there?
He totally made it himself. We just helped a little bit with the art direction. And we said, okay, for us, it was really important to not have women treated as object, and avoid nudity.
Gratuitous.
Yeah, I cannot pronounce that word.
No, I can't pronounce it either, and I speak the language.
Okay.
It's the only language I speak, I should say, and I can't say the word. So how do you feel these thematical concepts translated to the table? So Parma comes up with all this lore. You guys come up with 24 heroes. And so one of the biggest selling points for a game, especially a heroes-based game, is that the mechanics tie into the thematics of the characters. Do you feel you were really able to pull this off?
Yeah, I'm very satisfied of the result we got. I don't know, for example, we didn't mention yet, there are four factions, right?
Okay.
And each faction has a very strong thematic connotation. And for example, the green one, my favorite, they are the jungle tribal one. And their gameplay is based around these pillars that they get to place on the map. And the peculiar thing is each hero can use pillars from anywhere on the map. So
it
gives sort of like a hive mind kind of feeling of being everywhere. And and I could go on with all the three factions as well. But I'm quite satisfied with the result. Yeah.
Sure. And so like each of the heroes have like their unique abilities, but then they also have these synergies that identify them as, hey, I am the green faction or I am red faction. They just have those innate synergies that kind of work together.
Yeah, I can briefly go over them just to give an idea to the listeners.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, like the blue faction. I won't say names because there's no need for them. But the blue faction is the one that is able to transform into wild animals at will.
Nice.
And they are like the ice faction. Each faction is kind of as sort of an element. We never say that officially, but you feel it immediately as you watch them.
The design direction, the art direction is like these guys have a lot of ice going on.
Yeah. And then there is like the yellow faction that's like coming from a desert, and they are like an aristocracy of mages, and they work gameplay wise with illusions of themselves.
Oh, wow.
That like overwhelm the opponents, right? And they are all about control, tricks, and then there is the red faction. The red faction is the first we designed. It's inspired by the Japanese kind of culture, and it's all about direct damage, and
you gotta have at least one of those factions,
right? So if you play with a kid, with your son, he's gonna get that, right?
Right. So, give him the one that just beats people in the face.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And so each of these factions, like in the world, the whole premise is that they all are in part of these islands that kind of float in the sky. And that's where the name Sky Terror comes from. Is there's a little bit of tie into that thematically?
Yes. So we kind of lost that link, actually, between the two Kickstarters. So long story short, we did a first Kickstarter, but we ended up canceling it, even if it was funded, because we had to learn still a bit too many manufacturing things to get things right, right?
Oh.
And one of them was that we had two separate game boards, like Shadespire has.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that you could merge them, right? And they were like the two floating islands crashing into each other. And so you could see the break, the tear between the two islands, right? But the problem is it was too expensive. So we ended up cutting that for at least the first iteration of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So the name remained, but you don't see the tear anymore on the board. So that's a little
backstory. Instead, you've got the dome in the middle.
Yeah, we still had the dome even back then. Because the idea is that the dome is created after the two islands are crushing each other. It's like energy released.
Gotcha.
And the Sky Terror is the energy, right? And the energy released, the Sky Terror released from the crash, creates the dome and the Sky Terror elemental, that is this monster that the heroes can try to tame, right? And the outsider is called.
Man, that's really cool. So for people who are into the fluff and like want to know a little bit more about what's going on, are there like backstories for all these heroes? Is there like, lore that you can go to the website and kind of find out or stories or anything?
Oh, totally. Yeah, website. Well, what you said is correct. If you go to playskyter.com, you'll find a short backstory for each hero. And if you want to dig deeper, we also have an art book with, 64 pages illustrated art cover.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But more than that, we want the lore to be constantly evolving. And so we just started last month in February a global campaign where we're going to release a scenario each month
Yeah,
and we take a player like battle reports in, and based on those, we are influencing the development of the lore. And so,
oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I love it when companies do that too, man. It's one of my favorite things. Like, because when you're a player, it's like there's just a great feeling about being able to go to a table, have a game, and then know that, you know, reporting that result is going to affect something. And that when, you know, the next thing that comes out, you'll be like, hey, this happened because of what we did in our game type thing. And it doesn't matter if like you directly affected it, but you're just kind of a part of a greater whole. And it's just a really great feeling.
Yep.
I really want to get into some rules and mechanics for the pregame, but we're going to take a quick break and then we'll come right back into that.
Great.
Howdy friends, here on the third floor, you'll find us playing Malifaux and other games on Mats by Mars. They are scratch resistant, waterproof, wet erase marker compatible, and lighter than neoprene. Mats by Mars gives you over 40 designs to choose from. Pick a mat size, pick a design, then choose an overlay like the one for Marvel Crisis Protocol or Malifaux 3rd Edition. It will speed up deployment and the placement of strategy and objective markers. If you're going to Adepticon this year, be sure to check out the Mats by Mars booth. Until the end of March 2020, you can use the new promo code 3rd floor 320, that's 3rd floor 320, to get a 10% discount on your next order. In the notes, you can ask for the third floor logo to be put on your mat for free. Again, use the promo code 3rd floor 320 to get a 10% discount. Details are in the show notes.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back. Now, this is a massive selling point from your website, and I really want to address it because it seems a little too good to be true. But Giacomo, your website says that you can set up and be ready to play in just 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, can you walk us through how that's even possible?
Yeah. Well, first of all, people didn't believe us, and right so. Mm-hmm. So we had to record a video with a stopwatch to actually demonstrate that.
Oh, that's great.
And it's actually way less than 2 minutes. But if you write 30 seconds, people really like will never believe it, right?
Oh,
so,
sure.
Anyway, that was one of our constraints since the beginning. Like, we hate messing up with components, tokens, and setup, right? So we simply decided we needed a very fast setup. And
okay.
The way it works is quite simple. You put the board in the middle, mm-hmm. and then you build up this stack of tokens. Those are the towers. They are defending your base.
Okay.
And then you put like 4 minions each. They will help your heroes in advancing and tearing down the towers, you know, and
right.
then the base. And you are pretty much ready to play.
Wow.
Then, of course, there is a disclaimer that is the draft phase where you pick the heroes. That has some setup involved as well.
Okay.
But we consider that to be already the pregame. Like, it's not boring. You're actually
playing the game by this point.
You're actually playing. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, so we're talking specifically about the standard variant, which is because there's two variants that I remember reading in the rule book. Depending on which side of the board you're using, you can either kind of do a team-based variant or you do one-on-one, which is where the competitive play is done.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to taking out your opponent's base, there's three win conditions that get flipped randomly from an objective deck. What led you to kind of include that randomness in the alternate paths to victory? Was it just, you know, going back to that time constraint, you just wanted to speed the game up a little bit?
Yeah, it was exactly about that. Like, so another constraint we had was we wanted to finish all matches in under 50 minutes, okay, for tournaments.
Wow.
And so we couldn't do that without these extra victory cards, victory conditions. So we introduce them, even if they're not like MOBA, like in proper sense. But sure. the fun fact is that people, this is one of the most liked aspect of the game, of the gameplay.
Oh, wow.
Because it brings so much variety and also so much tension to the game, because one of these three is enough to immediately win the game, and these are shared between you and the opponent.
Oh, I gotcha. So basically, like, you flip those three win conditions, and then you draft your heroes after that. So now it's like, all right, who do I bring to be able to not only just maybe score one of those, but prevent them from being scored?
Yes, exactly. And maybe you start the game focusing on one, and then you have to switch over to another. But the fact that it's sudden victory makes everything very, very exciting.
And this ties into that whole trying to keep the game moving a little quicker, too, because, like, we play a lot of Malifaux at Third Floor Wars, as most of our listeners know. And one of the things about it is that it's a 2.5-hour game, which there's no problems with that. Like, miniature games in general tend to take a long time. But with the more games that have been coming out and the more evolved the player base becomes, it feels like finding games that can fit into that hour, hour and a half, you know, niche is becoming much, much more important.
Yeah, I mean, for us, like Ricardo, one of the main designer, my brother, was a big time player of Malifaux. And he was frustrated by the tournament scene because most of the games wouldn't finish, right?
Right.
So from day zero, we decided, okay, we need to make a game that we can finish in 50 minutes. And not just us, the designers. So we actually didn't know this was working until like a couple of weeks ago when we had the first official tournaments. And we saw that actually the vast majority of the games will finish in the 50 minutes, even from new players. That's very important for us.
That's going to feel great, though, because that means, because like, so I, the problem, of course, being that like you guys know everything. Yeah, so obviously you're going to finish it fast.
Yeah, in 20 minutes.
Right, but like someone who's never picked the game up before and is like, hey, I've played like, or has only played one or two games, like, hey, let's go play this tournament just for funsies.
Yeah.
And then they're still finishing in an under an hour. That's got to feel like quite the achievement for you.
Yeah. So, and the bonus point is people like that as well. So we were.
Oh, even better.
You know, so sometimes you have to embrace constraints and they'll bring you to nice places.
Yeah, and apparently for this one, I brought you to a fantastic place. So we got to love that. Now, the part, let's talk a little bit about the deck, because one of the caveats here for the setup is that, like, we don't include deck building in that pregame time, mm-hmm. right? Because, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the decks also kind of come pre-constructed. So, like, if you want to just crack open the box and start playing, you can absolutely do that, right?
Yeah, you just shuffle all the cards of the same color together and basically you're ready to play.
Okay, but for complexity purposes, this game can ramp up pretty quickly because you guys do the Magic the Gathering thing of allowing you to build your own deck of, or I think it's multiple decks, and you do that before you come to the table, right?
Right, so it's, as you said, it's multiple decks. The way it works is, in the competitive format, you bring to the table six heroes, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to play only with four of them.
Oh, okay.
And you draft these heroes only once you see the victory cards,
mm-hmm.
and you do that back and forth with your opponent. But the interesting part, and then coming back to the deck building now, is that each of these heroes has a pile of power cards, eight power cards, that you can customize so that the same warrior can be built in a more aggressive or more defensive way. Or you can specialize it in, you know, in dealing with minions and stuff like that. So the interesting part is, as you draft your heroes, your four heroes, you're shuffling together all the cards that you prepare for them. So it's not that you simply build a static deck of cards and it's always right. The same for the entirety of the tournament. but you dynamically build the deck based on the victory card and what your opponent does. And so that's something people really like, because it makes everything more fresh and more diverse.
Sure.
Also avoid the matchups. Like, there are no matches that you have lost before even trying.
Yeah, which is a big thing to some games, where it's like before you get to the table and declare the list that you're bringing or whatever, and before you've even put malls on the table, it's like, oh, well, I've lost this game.
Yeah, right. So, but also like the fact that it's not always the same list and deck of cards was very important to us.
Sure.
And, we are quite happy where we arrived. And then, of course, we'll see. Now we are experimenting with the community and looking for alternative formats that maybe include a ban of the hero, like they do in MOBA.
Right.
So you bring maybe 7 heroes and I ban you one. But for now, we're just keeping it simple and we will evolve over time.
Absolutely. There's no need to rush the issue, because it's like you've already got the solid core to work from for now.
Yes, totally. And so it's very nuanced. And also, like, into the equation, you have to put, like, the hero skills, right? Each hero has unique skills. So that quickly builds up a lot of complexity. So
yeah, absolutely. And so is there...
If you want to embrace it, otherwise you just play with...
Right, otherwise you can either just play with the pre-con decks or, you know, or just keep it simple and be like, I'm just going to do all of these types of cards because I don't want to have to think too hard. I just want to smash face.
Yeah, right.
Now, so when you're designing these cards and you're picking, like, your 6 heroes, does faction matter, or can you mix and match your favorites? How does that work?
Yeah, so you can mix and match your favorites, but with this being said, you have an incentive to... there are synergies from heroes from the same faction. So,
oh, okay.
Four red heroes will work well together best than, you know, mixed factions. But of course, if you start picking heroes from neighbor factions, you can enable different combinations and strategies. So nowadays in tournaments, you see all kind of combination except the 4 colors. I haven't seen it yet, but I think it's only a matter of time before that one will emerge as well.
Right. So, once more heroes have dropped and the game's expanded a little bit, someone's going to find that secret combination and be like, haha.
Yeah, right. So we already have a hero that is like the green mage. This dude with 6 arms. He can play any kind of colors.
Oh.
So I can already tell you it will be the one enabling this kind of archetype of the 4 colors.
That's awesome.
So.
Yeah. All right. And what about we talked briefly about the win conditions. And so the way those are generated is just at the beginning of the game, before you pick your heroes, you flip out the 3. Is there any kind of talks about variations on that front as well? Like, you know, flipping more cards and picking the 3, or being able to, like, you know, be like, no, I don't want to play that objective, flip a new one. Is that something that, again, you're just kind of waiting to see how the game evolves first?
Yeah, we want to keep it simple, you know? We want to keep it simple and evolve over time. So we started like this, but we are, you know, talking with the community every day, basically, and seeing what people like and not, and what, you know, and doing experiments. So now in April, for example, we are releasing a new expansion that's called Outsiders Expansion. As you might remember, Outsiders is the name of the monster in the dome, right? At the center of the map. Yeah. So we are adding new kind of outsiders, and that will add another pre-game element, because you'll be able to bring your own outsider to the table together with the heroes. And so that will add yet another layer to the pre-game, if you want to dig.
So it'll take 2 minutes and 30 seconds now instead of 2 minutes.
Yes. But worth it, yeah.
I'm really into this, man, but I think we need to dig into a little bit more of the in-game mechanics, because we're whetting the appetites of everybody, but we're kind of skirting around the main course. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about decks, we're going to talk about pushing lanes, and we're going to talk about the mechanics that make this game different from all the other miniature games you may have played on the market. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Howdy friends, Craig here. Nothing makes Malifaux easier than having the right tools. Here at the Third Floor, we love all the licensed Malifaux goodies from Custom Meeple. Not only are they helping support this podcast, they sell custom-made weird licensed tokens and terrain. They sell it all. Crew boxes, terrain, markers, tokens, and even a 3x3 full Malifaux board. Custom Meeple sells a complete M3E token set covering every marker and token you need to play. Custom Meeple are the source for the official accessories for Malifaux. Everything is designed by hand and authorized by Weird Games. Check them out at CustomMeeple.com, that's with one M, or follow the link in the show notes. Up your Malifaux game and be sure to tell them Craig from the Third Floor sent you. If you use the promo code ThirdFloorFriend, all one word, ThirdFloorFriend, you'll get a 5% discount and help support the podcast. It's valid on everything except retail products and playmats.
Welcome back, everyone. Giacomo, we've talked about the theme, why you should be interested from there. We've talked about the pregame and the level of customizability and flexibility that it provides. Now, we've got to go over what differentiates this game mechanically from the flock, because there's a lot of mini games. It's the golden age of miniature games right now. You'll hear that being tossed around a lot. And starting right off the bat, this game says no to randomness, or at least minimizing it as much as possible. Talk to me about the powers deck, how you resolve those attacks, and the various actions you can perform in Sky Terror, please.
Yeah, sure. So, well, first of all, on the back of our box, we say no dice, right? Really hate that. But we still like randomness and unexpected stuff.
Sure.
The first few months of Sky Terror, it was horrible. There was so much little randomness that it was like boring as hell. But then we picked up a mechanic that is basically flipping a card. It's replacing the rolling of a dice.
Okay.
And so your audience is familiar with Foe and yes, and the Deck of Fate, right?
Yes.
I think we innovated that a bit in a sense that we integrated that more into the gameplay and the deck building, because each power card, that is the, you know, the power card are these decks that you build before the game, right? And they are special power that your heroes can do. Mm-hmm. They have a second function. That is, they have a modifier, right?
So, okay.
So that they can be used as a dice. Our replacement of a dice.
Oh, and gotcha. So kind of like a Fate deck that's got special abilities on each of the cards rather than suits.
That's right. The important thing is there is a correlation we were mindful in assigning some kind of modifiers to some cards. For example, there is a very strong card that is called Time Warp. It allows you to basically dodge many attacks, right? And then very good card, super frustrating. and the thing is, the modifier it has is a minus one.
Oh! So
if you fill your deck with cards like those, you're gonna have a card. You're gonna have minus one every time you flip the dice, and so you're gonna suffer miserably in other fronts. So. On the other end, we might have a very situational card that is might be good, but very situational. So sometimes you waste it, and so that card has a plus two modifier instead.
Okay.
Okay.
And so you use the modifiers almost as what's the word I'm looking for here? It's almost as a cost to the card. Like it pulls double weight. So not only is it modifying your attack, but it's like, hey, if you want to include this card in your deck, you're going to have to pay the piper because it's such a good card. It's not going to help you in the duels.
That's right. Then we have a third element, since we're speaking, that I should bring up, because that's to give you the full picture.
Mm-hmm.
The same card has a third function. And that is, it will help the hero in pushing forward with the minions. So if you don't play the power card as a special move, you can play it as a bonus to push forward with your minions, okay?
Oh, so that gives use to a card that might be situational. And, oh, I can't use this card because it's just, it's a dead card for this particular matchup or at this particular time. But I'm going to still be able to use it for something, even if it ends up in my hand instead of being flipped.
Yeah, and it's the third variable we put into balancing and designing the cards. And it's a bit hard to explain it into detail without getting into the rules. But I just wanted to raise it, you know, to bring it up. I can make the extreme summary of this. That is, if you build a deck with a high mana curve, that is cards that take a lot of mana energy to play, that's going to be a very slow deck, but you are going to have an edge in pushing forward. So in moving forward with your minions.
Right.
On the opposite, if you do a very aggro deck with a low mana curve, that with cards that you can play right away from the first turn, you're going to have a hard time pushing forward with the minion. So that's an important breakthrough we had in design process. It's hard to explain it with words like this to the audience. I'm doing my best. I don't know if it makes any sense.
No, I think you're doing a great job of it because, like, with the, again, tying this into the complexity of that pregame, like looking at those win conditions, that's a reason why you might take one hero over another, or depending on how you design the deck, is like if you have this mage that you have high mana cards are using because you want to push lanes and then drop stuff late game, those conditions that you flip, the win conditions may not be conducive to that. And so now you've got to go for something that's a little more aggro heavy and maybe reach for that other hero that you have in your kit that can, that's not going to push as well, but you don't need that for this particular game.
Yeah.
That's really cool, man. Cause that, it just, anytime you give decision-making power to your players, I think you're doing a good job. And striking this balance between getting good modifiers or getting cards that affect the game more powerfully, it's just going to be something that's like, it's going to create really interesting, unique strategies to be married up with the various heroes that are here. But, and on that note, the power cards are not the only ones that have that kind of complexity curve. Like the heroes do as well, right? Because they have a basic or an advanced version that you can play depending on how complex you want to go.
Yeah, so another thing we really wanted to do is eliminate any kind of, I don't know how to say this English word, gratuitous, like free complexity, unneeded complexity. Yeah.
Sorry. Okay.
We wanted to make sure that every skill was used, right? And was meaningful and useful. And so, and even then we decided to have two versions of the game, one simplified without skills, because we thought that was adding a lot of complexity up front. And increasing the barrier to entry to new players. So we designed this simplified mode without skills that you still get the feel of the game, but you don't have to read up the hero skills and you don't get bogged down in trying to remember them and using them, you know, from the first game. So, yeah.
That's very clever, too, because you hit on that buzzword, the barrier of entry, and that's actually... That's probably one of the biggest problems I think miniature games have these days. And normally it's related to cost, but the second thing that it's normally attributed to is complexity. And like Malifaux has one of those problems where its barrier of entry for cost isn't too bad, but its barrier for entry for complexity is pretty high. And so like being able to create a game that not only is the cost not bad, which it's not with Sky Terror at all, but the complexity, like between being able to do predetermined decks and doing basic heroes, you know, and then like a 2-minute setup time, 50 minutes of gameplay, like that barrier of entry is extremely low. And then you can ramp it at your pace with your friends.
That's it. Yeah.
That is very, very cool. I'm going to get like all fanboy over this. So let's keep pushing on here. We got a lot to cover still. So let's talk minions and do a little bit more meat and potatoes for like the mechanics of the game. So the minions, obviously, for MOBA, or maybe not obviously if you don't play MOBAs, but minions are designed to take out towers. They're pushing lanes so that you can keep pushing further and get deeper into your enemy's territory. So in this game, minions are, the way they move is fairly streamlined, and you simplified the concept pretty elegantly, I would say. Can you tell us about this and how you arrived at its current iteration?
Yeah, sure. I mean, minions were one of the central part of the design and the one that took most iterations. Same with towers. like defending towers. Like, we basically stripped away everything we could. And we ended up with those, with the current iteration. So right now they are basically, we didn't want players to have to do bookkeeping with them, you know, to remember to move and to do stuff with them. So that was very important to us. And the way we are adding interesting aspect to the minions is with cards, special moves, right?
Right.
But by default, minions are just fancy, fancy control points. And because we tried many iterations and we have some, you know, many skeptical MOBA players that say, hey, minions seem a bit too, how do you say, inactive or passive.
Yeah, too passive.
And why cannot I attack towers directly with heroes? And why cannot I, you know, buy items or level up? So they keep asking all these kind of questions of stuff they expect from a MOBA. And our answer is always the same. That is, we are inspired by a MOBA, but we don't want to do a simulation of a computer game. Because in the computer game, the computer can keep track of all these variables for you. But if you have to remember that yourself, that's going to bog you down a lot, right?
Right. It just ramps that complexity up needlessly. At least for the beginning. Like, maybe stuff like that can be introduced later. Like, you guys are bringing in the outsider to the pregame. Yes. But like, it doesn't have to be there right now.
Exactly. So a lot of the time, we have such a long list of things we could do and we want to do with the game.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, 95% of the time we had to exercise discipline and say, this is super cool. It doesn't look complicated to us that we are the designers and we know everything by now, but it's time to, you know, put it in the freezer and talk again about it in 6 months.
It's very smart.
And so that was basically the conversation most of the time.
Okay. Now, so for minions, I don't want to go too deep into the rules per se, how do minions interact with towers and how do heroes interact with minions? So the heroes are, we just discussed that you can use cards to help move them that you haven't, that are in your hand that you haven't used for something else. And then there's a phase that they move themselves based off of the board state, correct?
Right, that's correct.
And so let's say you've got, how does this actualize on the table then? Like, so what happens as a minion pushes up a lane, gets towards a tower? What goes on in there?
Yeah, so as I was saying before, you cannot attack towers directly with your heroes. Mm-hmm. That's another thing we removed because we couldn't find the right mechanic for it.
Sure.
And to simplify things. And so the only way to damage structure and towers and the nexus is at the end of the turn when you determine who is pushing more on the lane, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you simply count heroes and minions within three axes toward the center of the line. You know, in the MOBAs, there is a line where minions meet.
Yes.
At the start of the game, it's at the center, and then that line gets pushed, you know, based on...
kind of a tug-of-war concept there.
Tug-of-war, yes. So you simply count heroes and minions, and they each count one within three axes from that line, and that's it. That's who has more is winning.
Oh, okay, gotcha. And well, so what does winning get you if you are the one who has more?
So basically, the difference of the two points is the damage that you're dealing.
Oh, okay.
So you can hard push if it's the difference is big. It's 5. It's a strong push. So you have 5 damage that you're dealing. And first, you damage the minions. And when minions are all gone, you start damaging the towers.
Gotcha. So it's very zone of control.
Yes. That's a big selling point for me. That makes it very different from all other arena games.
Mm-hmm.
Or skirmish games, because like my favorite playstyle, for example, is the green and blue faction, and I like to win without killing a single hero. I just like to hide in the brushes and summon minions and push away enemies and slow them down And so just advance with my horde of minions and win like this.
Wow. I really like the fact that that's even a possibility for a strategy.
Yeah. I mean, because at the end of the game, you have to destroy the enemy base.
Sure.
So if, of course, it helps in defeating the enemy heroes. It's always a good thing to do. But right, if you build up some kind of deck that is centered around not doing that, you can still win.
And, wow, that's awesome. So what happens when you do defeat a hero? So like, let's say you're clashed in the middle here.
Yeah.
And, you know, your opponent's got 2-3 minions, you've got 2-3 minions, you've both got 2 heroes there.
Yeah.
And neither of you, you're not really making any headway because of that.
Yeah.
So you're like, all right, I got to take out one of these heroes. And right. You do. What happens at that point?
At that point, there are a couple of things going on. First of all, you draw some cards, and cards are the essence of this game. It is essentially a card game. We didn't say it before, but we should say it. It's a card game with heroes on a map. Like, so cards are everything. So the fact that you defeat an enemy hero gives you experience, and we represent experience as extra cards.
Oh, okay.
And then
that's
the other,
elegant.
The other thing is that hero will come back. Like in MOBAs, if you're familiar with the mechanic, heroes will spawn again. So they will lose one turn. So the enemy will have to do one turn without them. And that's out of 4 heroes, that's a big loss.
Yeah, that is.
So there is the risk of snowballing from there. And so that's basically what happens when you defeat an enemy, right? So you draw cards and it will come back.
Okay, cool. So the only other thing about the middle table that we haven't discussed then is the dome, which is effectively, could you call that the jungle of Skytear?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the idea was to replicate the jungle, but we couldn't have Fog of War, right? Like in a video game, we couldn't find an elegant way to do that. So instead, what we did was created this rule, this mechanism, where the perimeter of the dome, so the line around the dome, is blocking line of sight, but it's not blocking movement.
Oh.
So that's something I don't think it's... I think it's something new, where heroes can just walk freely through it, in and out. But if you are inside the dome, you don't see outside, and vice versa.
Okay.
And that's making... and that's
kind of emulates that Fog of War.
Yeah, somehow. It's making the map feel much bigger than it is,
mm-hmm.
because of this, white wall that you can walk through it.
Sure.
So, I mean, you let me know once you try the game how it feels, but I think we're absolutely quite happy with the result.
Okay, and there's also a couple of win conditions based off of controlling the outsider inside the dome too. So how pivotal do you feel that is in general? Like, is that like a viable tactic where you can like, I'm going to make a team of heroes, and half of them are designed to control the dome and still pull out the victory, even if you don't flip that win con? Is that still something you can do?
Yes, because at the end of the day, if you make a team that's all about winning the dome,
mm-hmm.
You're making a team that's tanky and a team that's good at pushing away heroes.
Oh, okay.
So that's something you can still recycle, quote-unquote, on the lanes. So
nice.
You can still go on the lanes and sort of, maybe you're not as effective because it's not the same thing exactly. But I mean, it's your fault, right? You are going all in on one strategy,
yeah,
so
exactly.
It's risky.
Yeah, if you're willing to take the risk, you gotta take the risk. You know, you gotta be willing for that not to pan out for you.
Yeah, I mean, and then with this said, it's also the reason why we have 6 heroes. So you bring 6 to the table, right? So you mm-hmm. might build 3 that are vertical around a victory condition or a couple of victory conditions. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you have 3 that are more like flexible. But yeah, I mean, we haven't still explored all the possibilities. So.
All right. And so the other thing I want to talk about is damage and mana, because you have to generate mana to play power cards, correct?
So you have to generate mana by default.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's a little bit like Hearthstone, if you play that. mm-hmm. where each turn the mana ramps up. So no matter what, on each turn, each single hero has mana equal to the current turn number.
Oh, okay.
So on turn three, each of the four hero has three mana. And so on. On turn four, each hero has four mana, and so on. And that that gives a sense of progression to the game. That's mm-hmm. really that we really like it, because on turn three, that's the turn when three mana is the cost is the mana cost of an ultimate.
Oh, so that's when like you know the big things happen.
Yes, like fireworks. So a lot of high level competitive games is about getting ready for turn three.
And then capitalizing.
Yeah, and capitalize on it, right? And so that's how we designed the mana to avoid any kind of mana screw. That's what you know, Magic player call when they don't draw mana.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And what about damage? How is that resolved? Is it just a flat number based off of the hero? So if my hero attacks your hero, we flip for the modifier and I win that duel. I just do, what happens then? Do I just do X amount of points of damage? Or
So there is a base damage that you deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you flip a modifier on top of that.
Okay. Oh, so another reason to be careful about those negative modifiers is that it can impede your ability to deal damage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It can go to zero.
Oh, wow.
So that makes you very ineffective in maybe even killing a minion, for example.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So you pay the price for it, so to speak. So, I mean, modifiers and randomness still play a big part of it. And that was important for us because you still have those exciting moments, you know, when you mm-hmm. when you flip a big modifier or a minus one. So that those are the peak of the game that you will remember. At the end.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's the mechanic of it, yeah.
Man, I gotta tell you, Giacomo, being a fan of both League of Legends, I put a lot of time into that, and Magic the Gathering, you kind of already had me at hello when I first started looking at this game. But the rules also just seem very, like, they're just very solid and inviting. It's like it's not overly complex. You know, you mentioned that was one of your big goals was to ease that barrier of entry, not just from the setup of the game, but the playing of the game. And it really kind of does feel like that. It's like you can treat this as a board game, just drop it on the table, really dig, or you can really dig into some of that tactical depth and kind of treat it as more like a traditional miniatures game that's fueled by, you know, deck building.
Right. Yes. So we like both sides. If we had to pick one, we would go on the competitive side, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to make choices along the way to not make compromise, right? Our target market is clear. We call PvP geeks, right? So we are all about
the PvP.
Yeah, about the PvP experience, like the head-to-head experience of trying to, you know, outsmart the enemy. So with this being said, we are mindful that many players will just enjoy Skytear as a board game. That's fine. We also designed the back another map that is more with board gamers in mind. That is a bigger map that takes 2 hours to play. It has three lanes instead of two. It has no extra victory conditions.
Mm.
And it's like 6 versus 6 heroes.
Okay, and that's the one that's designed to be a little more like 4 people playing.
Yeah, or even 2, but it's more like a board game in a sense that, you know, takes 2 hours to play.
All right, I think we've covered everything I wanted to cover for the in-game, so I think we're going to take another quick break and then come back and we're going to talk about the hobby side of Skytear.
Hi, I'm James Hahn, and I'm a patron of Third Floor Wars because I'm a henchman who loses most of his games, and the podcast has tons of valuable information to improve your play as well as what to expect from other crews. You can support them too. The link is in the show notes, or just search for Third Floor Wars on Patreon.com.
Big thanks to all of you patrons out there. We appreciate the fact that you find value in what we are producing. I need to give a quick shout out to some of our lifetime long top patrons. So hats off to Nick Westbrook, Kevin Smith, Sam Newman, Stephen Morris, Craig Chuba, James Hahn, Jeremy Peace, Ambrose Ingram and Brandon Somer. You guys are the ones that have really done the most for Third Floor Wars' Patreon, and we appreciate it.
All right, so welcome back, everybody. And now it's time to talk minis. You get a decent amount in this game. Every faction has their own minions, which I believe comes with four minions for each faction in the base game. And then there's the heroes and, of course, the outsider, which also have minis. What does that break down? It's something like 25 plus minis in the base game. Is that right, Giacomo?
Yeah, it's 25 miniatures pre-assembled in the starter box, yeah. For $70. That wasn't easy.
Yes, it couldn't have been. It's like, I don't get that kind of, like Malifaux, that's like $50. You get five minis and you got to put them together still. And not knocking Malifaux, don't get me wrong. I really enjoy putting together the minis, unless it's one of the Gremlin models, which no. But everyone who plays Malifaux has gone through the trial by fire of putting together a fiddly bit. And so there's definitely a great allure to a game that says you don't have to worry about that. Just come pick up a mini and put it down. But there's going to be more expansions released, obviously, because we mentioned before that the core set comes with 8 heroes, but there's 24 in the game. Are all of those released? And if they are, how are the expansions coming packaged right now? Do they also come with minions, or is the 4 that you get in the core enough? Like, what's happening there?
So yes, they are released already. So there are 4 expansions plus a core set on day mm-hmm. 1. That was like in February. And because why that? Because we are having tournaments from day 1. And it's important to have a variety and many viable options and strategies from day 1, right? So that's why we released everything at once. And also to give a signal to retailers that we are not just a board game, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and to answer your questions, yes, they come with minions as well. Each expansion, the way we pitch it is basically it completes the faction you like the most. Because the usual starter box, we didn't pick 2 factions to put into the starter box. We instead pick 2 heroes from each faction. So you end up getting a taste of all the 4 factions. And after that, if you like the Japanese aggro people most, then you can buy the red expansion, and that will complete your faction with 4 more heroes, 4 more minions, and 32 more cards to give you some deck building options. And the same can be said for all the other 3 factions, of course.
Right. I know, just a quick aside, I noticed on the artwork when I was scrolling through on the website, the minions and outsiders are on hex spaces, and the heroes are on circular. Was this to kind of like help differentiate them on the table?
Yeah, so yes. I mean, the outsider, the big one, it doesn't move.
Okay.
So it occupies the axis, and with also the 3D, the sculpt of it worked best with a bigger base. Hexagonal one. And a little bit the same can be said for the minions. We just thought it made more sense to have a different shape for them because they are designed to stay there, stand still, until you push at the end of the turn. And they are very different from heroes. And if at some point we make big minions or small heroes, we will be able to distinguish them by the base as well.
Oh, that's definitely something. And that was actually something I was going to ask you about in the last segment was the big minion thing. So I'm looking forward to seeing if when that comes to actualization, because that's actually one of my favorite parts of League is seeing the big dudes lumbering down the lane.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, we have such a huge list of opportunities. So that's one of them, like because I want to see as well big badass minion monsters. At the same time, I also want to see the tiny hero that can hide between, minions and stuff. So, it takes time.
And these come, absolutely. And these come fully assembled, ready to go on the table, as we've already said a couple of times.
Yep.
What kind of material are we looking at there for the hobbyists out there, for painters? Is it resin? Is it plastic?
It's plastic, and it's very, very resistant. We were very careful in and very detailed as well. I encourage all the listeners to go check out some unboxing on YouTube. There are many to see like the level of details that we could get, because we were lucky. We found a very good manufacturer. And
nice.
The same of Mech versus Minions. If you ever got a game, for example, or Scythe.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Familiar with that one.
So they helped us in making sure. You know, we worked a lot closely with plastic engineers to make sure all the details would come through and they would be stable and stuff like that.
That's awesome. Yeah. And just from what I've seen so far, I do have to agree. Check out some unboxings if you haven't already. And Third Floor Wars will have our own unboxing for this game coming out in the next few weeks. The minis are gorgeous. And actually, honestly, the artwork for this game is pretty gorgeous in general. The game board looks great. The artwork that I've seen on the website and in the rulebook is fantastic.
Thanks.
Is that something from did Parma do all of that?
Well, he did. Our direction, right? So we had we hired freelancers. They are all in the credits of the rulebook, so you can check them out, and or even in the bottom of the cards. And the thing is, we are increasing the quality also for the expansions. So we are doubling down on the budgets and trying to reach the highest level we can.
Okay. Is there going to be any kind of other miniatures down in the pipes for like things like, obviously terrain doesn't really work here, I don't feel, because like, when you're trying to hide your hero in the bushes, for example, you can't actually have a 3D bush chilling out there. But what about for like, towers or like, for the home base or anything like that? Is there anything planned for that type of concept?
Actually, we already have them.
But
the fun part is they are part of the organized play kits. They are prizes. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's another thing we really wanted to have, very cool prizes and unique stuff. And so we took the idea of the translucent miniature from Malifaux. So they are mystery boxes called, right? I think. Malifaux has these prizes, I think. Where
mystery boxes is correct. Yeah.
So we took that, and also we added other things like 3D towers.
Nice.
That you can use to replace cardboard tokens. And we added also plastic chips that, they pimp up your copy of SkyTear, basically.
That's awesome.
And, other than promo cards and the usual stuff.
Okay, yeah, and it's like that's allure, that's draw there. It's like everyone wants to come out and play a game that they enjoy, but it's even better if you come out and play a game you enjoy, and it pimps out your game for doing so. All right, and so we've talked about the expansion coming out in April. Is there one also coming out in summer, or is that
yes?
Okay,
yeah. I mean, for us, another very important point was reliability in the releases and making sure we could regularly release new stuff and that retailers could get them. So the plan that we are trying to stick to is a release every 3 months.
Oh, wow, that's aggressive.
Yeah, so right now we are printing the July expansion and we are finalizing the October one as well.
Oh, wow.
And we are talking 4 new heroes in each.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Are the 4 new heroes, is it like one per faction kind of concept? Or is it like...
and I can give you a spoiler even.
That'd be wonderful.
Yeah, one perfection, but they will be the first of a kind that are designed to work as a glue between factions.
Oh, so kind of almost like crossover models.
Sort of, yes. Because we want to shake up the meta, right? Right now, there is a big incentive in keeping a single color, but still people mix them. But from the summer, we want to introduce these new heroes that will facilitate new combinations. So B&B color and stuff.
That's going to be fantastic. Let's see what you're saying. Like that 4 color is just around the corner now. It's like quite literally it could be.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Giacomo, I really feel that you and your team in general, I think it's 4 of you, right? Is that correct?
4, yes.
Okay, so the four of you have absolutely hit the nail on the head with this one. I'm super excited to start playing, and I'm super excited for what we're hearing. Like, it sounds like you're making all the correct design decisions, and you're making all the correct decisions based off of, you know, being players. And that's something we don't see very often. At least I feel we don't see often enough, and that is developers who respect their player roots and how they're approaching things. And for, you know, for honestly such a small team to be able to have generated what you guys have generated is just absolutely astronomical. So that's very cool, man. I'm very excited for you guys.
Thank you.
So we're going to take one final break, and then we're going to come back for the wrap up, do a couple of plugs, and then get the old elevator pitch going. So stay tuned.
Howdy folks, Craig here. Now if you love gadgets as much as we do, you're going to love the new Third Floor Wars gadget bundle from Schooner Labs. Branded with the logo of your favorite podcast, it comes with two measuring multi-tools, a compass stepper for those tight and important movements, along with a compact dashboard to track your turn, strat, and scheme scoring, along with your soul stones and pass tokens. It is the perfect bundle for anyone who plays Malifaux or just wants to look cool while doing it. The link is in the show notes. Check them out and help support your favorite gaming podcast.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's time for the old elevator pitch. Giacomo, for those listeners that might still be hesitant to dive in, and I don't know why you would be at this point, but just in case, what else would you might say to entice them to take the plunge into this unique and interesting game that is SkyTerre?
I would say that we, the developers, are really with the community day to day and super approachable. You can just chat with me on Discord, and I think that will help us, you know, develop and grow. And we're not in a rush, so you can take your time, come talk with us, have a look around, lurk, and I hope you love the game.
Awesome. I love that level of interaction that you're able to give right now, because again, one of those things that, like players, we don't always get the access to. And I think it's been something that the social media has helped facilitate, so it's a little bit more there. But being able to just go up to the developer and be like, hey, I love your game, but this, and be heard, like, that's a really good feeling, just in general. Just knowing that you're able to, like, you know, give some feedback and that it's going to get read, it's going to get listened to, and, you know, maybe something even comes of it.
Yeah, I mean, and at the end of the day, we are working to make the game of our dreams, right? And we believe there is a bunch of other people that share the dream, and we don't want to get as many people as possible, just the people that, you know, share our own, you know, ideal game. Yeah,
absolutely. And I gotta tell you, I'm definitely on board as one of those people sharing that vision, because I cannot wait to get going on this game. We have my close personal buddy and buddy of the show, Jim Ortiz. He's one of the locals here for Third Floor Wars. And he is a good friend of mine that is also completely ADHD when it comes to board games and miniature games in general. And he is my gateway drug to a lot of things, and I end up being his gateway drug to a few things as well. So for those of you who didn't hear our last episode of Why You Should Be Playing, we talked about Starbreach, and so Jim and I have that scheduled up, but when I started doing all the research for this episode for SkyTerre, I'm like, Jim, we have to play this game. Like, you don't understand how much we have to play this game. So if you are listening to this and you are still not sold on supporting Giacomo and PvP Geeks, then, like, watch videos. Like, check out these unboxings. You know, please keep looking at this information, because these guys have generated something that is greater than the sum of its parts, and they deserve all of our support. In the coming weeks, we're going to do a full review at Third Floor Wars, and we're also going to do an unboxing ourselves, so keep your eyes open for that. Giacomo, thank you so much for joining me today on the Third Floor. You've been wonderful, and thank you so much for, you know, you, your brother, and your friends for creating such a wonderful game and sharing it with the world.
Thanks.
Do you have any news or plugs that you'd like to toss out? You already gave us a spoiler, which we really appreciate. But is there anything else you want to toss out to the listeners before we sign off?
Well, yeah. I mean, on our website, we have a store locator. And you might find that, you know, close to you, there is already a store stocking SkyTerre with some people. into it. So that might help you get started.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Again, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And from Craig here and I on the third floor, as always, please like and subscribe if you enjoyed the content today. Consider supporting us on Patreon if you want to get early access to our podcast or more. You can find us also on Facebook or thirdfloorwars.com. And you can find more Tabletop Talk on any of your favorite streaming services. Heads up for some future episodes. We're starting up our new Solo Tactica podcast series where I'm going to be discussing and answering your Malifaux and other general wargaming questions. So please feel free to send in those questions to tabletoptalk@thirdfloorwars.com with the subject line of questions. This is Ray. Thank you again, Giacomo, for joining us, and we'll catch you all next time on the third floor.
Be sure to check out our shop on thirdfloorwars.com for the latest gaming apparel and gear. While you're there, check out how the USFO Tour is shaping up. How does your conference compare to the others in the United States? Where do you rank nationally? Get those models built, painted, and on the table so we can see you at the US Masters Invitational in October of 2020. Also, rate and write a review on this podcast for us. It really helps us find people almost as cool as you are. Thanks for listening. Howdy, friend. Craig here. Is this episode making you realize you need to buy some models? Gadzooks Gaming is my favorite online retailer because of their large selection, killer prices, and great customer service. Don't you hate buying an entire crew box when you only need one model? Gadzooks sells crew box models individually and saves you a ton of money. They even have free shipping to the US and Canada if you spend $100 or more. Swing by GadzooksGaming.com and make sure you tell them Craig from the third floor sent you. All the details are in the show notes.